This week on Not Another Business Show, we're going to change things up a bit. I speak to so many business owners and entrepreneurs in my daily travels, and each of them have such fascinating stories. So today, I thought we'd do a bit of a Stories from the Trenches episode, where some of our past and present guests can explain how they got to where they are now and what they've learned along the way.
You're listening to Season 2 of Not Another Business Show with your host, Tracy Sheen.
You're listening to Season 2, Episode 4 of Not Another Business Show. Today, we'll be hearing from fellow business owners as they share their very own stories. The challenges, the knockbacks, and the lessons along the way. Quite often as business owners or entrepreneurs, we're so focused on our own backyard that we miss some of the lessons that fellow business owners have. We know that to succeed in business, we need to be positive and single-minded. Yet out here in the real world, well, sometimes shit happens. Things don't go to plan. We lose a big client or we fail to win a contract. Employees give us grief. And the tax man, well, let's not even start that conversation. So I was keen to know how have some of our previous and current guests dealt with life in the real world of business ownership? What are the stories that got them to where they are today? The first guest I'd like to introduce you to is Carsten Primdale. He first appeared on the show back in Season 1, but what I didn't tell you about Carsten back then was his amazing backstory. Originally from Denmark, he moved and worked in China for 11 years before deciding to immigrate with his family to Australia. He had no idea of what he was going to do, so at first he thought he'd start importing goods from China.
After we moved to Australia, I actually started importing some products from overseas. I thought, look, I have some knowledge in how to deal with these businesses. I visited 250 or more than 250 factories in China on many occasions, and some of them I actually found quite good and approached some of them and started importing some stuff. But I realized pretty quickly that that's actually not where my heart is. My background is in corporate services, and that's what I enjoy doing, facilitating a business, and especially when it comes across cultures. I've obviously built up a lot of experience and knowledge that, yeah, I take it for granted, but I also realize that a lot of people come to me asking me questions when they can't figure it out themselves. And a lot of people who I respect for their knowledge, you know, almost to the point where I'm saying, okay, that guy is actually, he's smarter than me. But then he comes and asks me a question. Then it sort of gets flipped a little bit upside down because I realize that I actually have some information where he considers me smarter than him. So, yeah, it was very sort of eye-opening.
Like so many of us, we may look for what we think will be the easy business and end up disliking every minute of it. What struck me with Carsten, though, was his passion to follow through on what he enjoyed doing.
I think that you got to see it through. If you decided to go for it, you should go for it. Definitely think it's worthwhile. From my own experience, I think I worked for myself since 2007, and I would hate to go back and find a job because I've enjoyed it so much. I mean, you shouldn't start up doing something that you don't enjoy, right? So if you've started out something out of no ideas for other things to do, I think it's probably time to do a bit of soul searching, see if there's something else that you could do. But if you started a business out based on 20 years of experience in a field and you're actually looking back and you kind of enjoyed those 20 years, then I think you're probably onto something good. So I'd say go for it. If you can convince yourself that you're onto something good, then go for it and go the full line. Because the results don't come overnight. It's not just a question of putting up a website. You need much more than that. But passion is definitely one of them.
During my chat with Carsten, he never suggested the whole transition from Asia to Australia and creating this whole new business had been easy. But I love that he decided to back himself and move forward with his dream. He went through a number of steps to build his successful business. But the one I particularly found interesting was what he had to say about turning all of his IP into a product that he could leverage in the business.
First of all, I decided to write a book. So I did a brain dump of all the issues that I've been dealing with while in China. I didn't consider many of these things to be sort of common knowledge for people who are in China, but I didn't actually think about it from the other perspective, that people who haven't got the experience with China, they might not know all these little nitty-gritty details and realize that that they should do something about it. The first step was to get a draft manuscript done and get it populated with relevant information. Well, it's a very sort of factual manuscript, very factual book. And then essentially getting my pitch done so that I'm able to express to people what I'm actually doing. Getting the products done online so that I have a starting point for people to order my services. And I say I have to share a little secret that it's not my online product is not my core product, but it's a way that I qualify people. So I think it offers a lot of value knowing who you're dealing with. The consulting service that I then offer beyond that is not listed on the website. That's my core product, where I help companies figure out what is what and how they can assess their risks.
The process of dumping his IP from his head into a book allowed him to get clear on what it was he was selling and who his clients were. Carsten has since gone on to build a highly successful supply chain consultant business working with companies who manufacture in China. So, lesson one from the trenches: dogged determination and the creation of assets will help you get clear on the business that you want to have and the clients that you want to work with. The next guest I chatted to also appeared on season one and is also someone who has moved to Australia and started her own business. Oksana's description of how she got into business was...
It was a fluke. I came from Russia to study English for 6 months. I didn't speak one word of English and it was a big problem. So I went to school. Then I applied for residency. And a year and a half later, I got a residency. And another 6 months later, I started business because my girlfriend said, look, you're so creative. You so loved all these gifts and stuff. Why don't you start the hamper company? So originally I started the hamper company and I called it Gifts on the Run, and I grew it. I had no office, I had no car, I had no clients. So I went to 400 networking function a year and I met all the people. I grew the company, and then one day one of the branding agencies said to me, I was Gifts on the Run. I was running like a chicken without the head. And then my client introduced me to branding agency, and they were doing rebranding for Goodman Fielder. I didn't know who Goodman Fielder is. I thought it's a man. So I thought I'm just going to meet the Goodman Fielder man. So I go to the meeting and they say, look, we're rebranding. We have this many salespeople. We need to do this. Can you help us? And they were more asking about promotional product, because even still selling hampers, I was still doing, you know, slowly I was finding suppliers who can do pen and a mug. So slowly I was doing some branded items. But what's happened when Goodman Fielder, after two meetings, give me an order for $60,000, I realize I don't want to be Gifts on the Run anymore.
Being a business owner can have anyone feeling like they're a chook with their head cut off. And it certainly does require its fair dash of right place at the right time for us to take advantage of those moments. So I'm sure you're wondering what happened to Oksana after that.
I created the monster where I have, hypothetically, if you want to turn over $1 million, you can have 1 million customer give you $1 each, and you have to do 1 million invoices and deal with 1 million courier companies and write 1 million Merry Christmas cards. Or you can deal with 10 customers who got 100 grand, or you can deal with 100 customers who got 10 grand a year, and this is your million. And activities that you need to do, like suddenly, oh my God, I have time to have lunch, or I have time to actually talk to my girlfriend, where before I was Gifts on the Run, you know. People were calling my number, mobile number, any time of the day. I had 7 staff and courier companies 6 o'clock in the morning. With Goodman Fielder, I only saw the sample of each product, and it went direct from China to Macquarie Field warehouse. I did not see anything. I just sent them invoice. And I thought, oh my God, I need rebrand. So I went to this guy who did my marketing. I call him and I say, I have a problem. I want to kill Gifts on the Run. I need to rebrand. I want a name that people don't know what I do, like Sony. I can be anything. He gave me three names and I picked this name. It's come from Latin. It's mean to leave orders, to command, to hold sway. And I had a big launch. It was 12 years ago. So my life was never the same since then.
The name she came up with, by the way, is Impero. I recently went to Oksana's new season product launch with a room full of major corporate companies all browsing through her catalogues, writing and handing over their purchase orders. Not a bad business that started as a fluke, huh? Oksana shared with me her favourite piece of advice from Steve Jobs that she says helped her make sense out of her fluke entry into business.
Steve Jobs said, you can never put the dots forward. You can only look back. And you can only connect the dots looking back. And they said, now it makes sense.
My biggest takeaway from that conversation with Oksana is that we all need to recognize the little pieces of luck that we get in our day-to-day business. But once seen, we need to seize them and wring them out for all their goodness. It's only in the looking back will the things that happened along the way make sense. Before we leave Oksana, I asked her how she stayed focused and has continued her own personal growth as an entrepreneur who felt like she stumbled into business.
I love networking. I do what I do because I love people. So it's always my business, you know, I meet amazing people and I connect with them. Some you don't connect and it's okay. But if it's all numbers, if you meet 10 people through the week, it's a few people that you can connect. You have to stay current. You learn what, you know, what network you're interested in. What do you like? Do you like art? Do you like, I do yoga every day. You know, I connect with yoga community because I like it. I connect with business people. I think it's my attitude is very, I guess maybe it's a Russian background and we're very disciplined and hungry because we were starving for so long. We're hungry. My attitude, and I always learn, I love learning and reading and seeing what's current. Like, it's exciting. Like, I think we live in very exciting times. So it's just up to you to take the opportunity and suck it on in and be active. People say to me, but nobody interested in me. And I always say, you know what, for people to be interested in you, why don't you become interesting? Because if I'm interesting, you know what, many, many people want to talk to me. But if I'm boring and know nothing and been nowhere and have no stories to tell, of course, nobody's going to be interested. So invest in, I always go to the courses. So if you surround yourself with people that are on the same page, it's amazing. Like, Australia is just amazing. It's like, I wish I had 48 hours in a day.
What I love most about chatting with Oksana is that she's always so upbeat. If something doesn't go her way, she brushes it off, flicks her hair, and everything is right with the world again. She said to me once, "What's the worst someone is going to do? Say no? I grew up in Russia where we would line up for toilet paper. A no? It's nothing." The next guest I want to check back in with was also from season one and also an immigrant to Australia, John Carney.
My name's John Carney and I'm a real estate investor and developer.
John grew up in the USA. He had a strong real estate pedigree in his family and spent some time working in his grandfather's business as a teenager and then in his father's real estate business when he was in his 20s. He got the real estate itch watching his dad turn old buildings into apartments and commercial retail space. So he knew that owning his own business was in his blood. I asked him what his process was once he had decided to make the move to Australia.
That was my plan, move to Australia and learn about Australian real estate and commercial development from the sales and leasing perspective of one of your large, well-known international brokerage houses. I wasn't even allowed to work yet. I moved to Australia and then applied for the partner visa. So I was interviewing pretty much straight away. That was 2009. And while I didn't know much about Australia in the real estate market at the time, the sky was definitely falling and it was doom and gloom in the United States. So there was a little bit of no one was really hiring. I was also just talking to people about everyone I met. Would provide another name and another phone number, and I would call and ask for a meeting and send emails, and I was persistent because not everyone said yes at the first phone call, or not everyone was responding to my emails or my phone calls. So I had to be persistent. You know, as my network of friends slowly evolved, I met people that were in real estate or had past experiences in real estate, and was just really taking note of who I was meeting and how I could ask them for help. So that's how the hustle started. I ended up meeting another American who was starting. He was a licensed real estate agent in Melbourne, and he was aligned with an accounting firm in Melbourne, and they were going to start helping Australians buy properties in the U.S. And I worked with him as a subcontractor for a few months, but was restricted, I suppose. You know, he was the boss. I was a little restricted in who I was able to work with in the U.S. And of course, I wanted to work with my network. I just ended up going down my own path.
So even though John arrived with an idea and a plan, he had 6 months of not being able to earn an income. So I wanted to know how he kept himself motivated.
That's a great question. And looking back on that time, I mean, I had great support from my partner. Everything was new and exciting and different as well. I had a goal. It really boils down to I had a goal that I was working towards. And the initial goal wasn't just to find work and earn an income. That was the initial goal. But the long-term goal was I didn't know how long I was going to be in Australia. I wanted to get into real estate development. Australia is an expensive place to be in real estate development. That wasn't going to happen immediately. Whole new culture of business and regulations and language, business language and real estate language that I had to learn. So, you know, I went and became a licensed agent's representative in my downtime. I read a lot. I ran a lot. To fill in the time, I exercise more than that, filled in the gaps in good shape. And I think that helped physically and mentally. And I had my goal. I had my long-term goal. And I was working to achieve that. And I never lost sight of what I wanted to accomplish.
John and I joked about how he was an overnight success in 7 years. Sound familiar to you? The last lesson from the trench that John shared with me is how he stays motivated to stay focused on his goals. And in part for him, it's around having a morning ritual.
Look, I do have a morning ritual, which involves waking. I wake up early 3 days a week. I drive to the gym and I listen to a podcast on the way to and the way from. And that inspires me, and that's a good way to get the day going. So on a self-development side, I read about a book a month at minimum, usually 2 books a month, fiction and nonfiction intermixed, but I kind of listen to what other people in my space and in my network. I've got friends that I collaborate with that are like-minded entrepreneurs, and we trade tales of what books and what podcasts and what seminars are working for us. Having that access to community where you're not just talking about business, talking about improving yourself is important for small business people. This year, I'm working on self-development, which a lot of it has to do with breathing and meditation. So there's always something new to learn, Tracy, as I'm sure you know. And I'm enthusiastic every day when it's like, you know, there's opportunity out there. What can I learn? How can I help people? What's next? You just never know what's gonna come your way.
I'm really enjoying hearing from our past guests as to how they've grown their business into the successful stages that they are now. So I hope you're getting something out of each of these stories as well. Our next guest was also featured in season one and was an absolute delight to talk to. Sally Arnold is an author, speaker, and coach of high-performing individuals at Creating Encores. When I first spoke with Sally, I was struck by her story. She worked part of her life with the Australian Ballet and also with orchestras. In 2002, her husband, Tony, passed away from cancer, and needing to get away from it all, she packed up and went to Byron Bay. Falling in love with the place, she sold up everything and relocated there permanently. Upon reflection, Sally has said that the time was meant to help her heal. But being a high-performing individual herself, she couldn't just sit around in the sunshine forever, nor could she create the style of coaching business that she had wanted for herself or her clients in Byron Bay. So she relocated back to Melbourne and now spends her time travelling between Australian capital cities and New York working with her clients. I felt it important to ask Sally, who had obviously had quite a bumpy road to create the success that creating Encores has grown to be. Why is it that we don't like to share our failures or setbacks?
It's about courage, and that I can even remember for myself. I've had so many of them. I mean, it was almost like I wanted to portray to the world that I was this person that had achieved a heap, which I have, but I've had a terrible amount of in the way of setbacks. And I guess for me, I can only talk about myself as well, that it was about showing me to be a lesser person than I projected to the world. And it took a lot of courage to actually admit to people, to others, in whether it's networking meetings or in events or even when I'm speaking as well. And I must admit, it was only through my psychotherapy training that I found a way to be able to open up and speak about the really tough things that had happened in my life. And I think also, Tracy, it came from my family of origin. It was almost like, but, you know, we always portray to the world that everything is fine, you know, everything's going along really well. And how dare we tell the world that things aren't going that well? We're this sort of family. So for me, I'm still challenged by that, because I notice when I'm back with my family in New Zealand, they try to portray to the world that they're all together while they're not. So it just takes a lot of guts and courage to talk about those really terrible times, those really challenging times. But when we actually manage to do that, that's when I believe the people that are meant to work with us, to look further at our products, start to come alongside. And I remember many years ago when I was living in the US, and I was always attracted to psychologists, to work with psychologists that were the wounded healers, because they'd been through the shit, they'd been down some deep, dark tunnels. And I thought, well, they can't help. I want someone to help me because I've been down in a deep, dark tunnel. And unless they've been there, they don't really understand what it's like. So I know that they'll be able to help me move out of that tunnel. So I believe we can only get to that stage when we've done a bit of work on ourselves. And hey, it's still very challenging.
This reminded me of the Japanese philosophy, Kintsugi. My apologies if I've pronounced that incorrectly, which I probably have. It's part of repairing broken pottery with lacquer dusted or mixed with powdered gold, silver, or platinum. And as a philosophy, it treats breakage and repair as part of the history of an object rather than something to disguise.
That's such a beautiful story. But in the gold, when you think, that's almost like an alchemical way of putting the pot back together. And I have to say that the closest friends that I've got are the friends that have seen me in the times when I have been broken, that have been around me, that have seen the shit, that have seen the really shocking things that have happened in my life. And I've seen the same with them. And we are just extraordinary friends. And I find now that the friends that I'm not connected with anymore are people that sort of almost have this facade and they're not real. And to me, the people that are real, this, oh my gosh, there's something about them. They're true, they're honest, they're connected. And if anything goes wrong, they're always the first lot of friends around with a bottle of wine and something like that. So to me, it's almost about celebrating that those parts of ourselves, but we don't have to stay down in those areas. We don't have to be victim and wallow in them. We come back up again. And I love that metaphor that you just mentioned of gold. I mean, of sealing the pot with gold. My gosh, it's beautiful.
Enjoying the show? Join us on Twitter at @NABS_podcast and tell us your favorite moment from today's episode.
I was reminded when chatting with Sally that it's the way we choose to see and acknowledge events that really give it meaning. As Sally said, we can either wallow in the pity of everything that has happened, or we can pick ourselves up, refocus, set our intentions to follow through on our goal. I know I've had times as a business owner when I felt so defeated that I didn't know how I was going to keep going. We all do. But it's what we make of those moments that define whether we will continue on our business or whether we'll seek safe harbour. The final guest I want to introduce you to on today's show may at first glance seem a little bit of a mismatch, but his story and his lessons are valuable to all of us as business owners. Mayor Paul Pasali is the mayor of Ipswich, the fastest growing city in Queensland. He is a child of Sicilian immigrants who was raised in the city that he now runs. He spent time in his working career as an industrial chemist. He's owned his own restaurant and hotel, and at last election got a whopping 88% of the vote. He's been a member of council since 1991 and has held the office of mayor since 2004. He holds a Guinness World Record for the most espresso cups. I've seen the collection. It travels down the hallway in the council chambers, lines the reception area and his office. And all in all, he shared some great information on his journey that is worthy of sharing. We started our conversation with me asking him what led him from being in business himself to transitioning to council.
At the end of the day, I saw a city that was becoming a laughingstock in Australia. Mm. I saw a city where our kids were leaving. My own daughter didn't have any respect. I saw a city that people weren't even prepared to say the name Ipswich, and I was president of the chamber, and I was involved in businesses myself, and people were saying, well, you stop whinging about it, because I kept whinging about council. And I thought, yeah, I am whinging. And they said, most people should stop whinging and do something about it. So I put my hand up, I went in there. You don't go into local government for money, especially when I've come out from private enterprise. But the sense of enjoyment now to take a city where it was two-head city that everybody laughed about, now to become the top seven intelligent communities in the world. Mm. No other Australian city has made that. And they're great awards to win, but it's not what I love the most. It's the pride. It's the pride and the feeling. And when you walk down the street, everybody's proud to say they live in Ipswich. And Ipswich is now known for the right reasons, and we're getting master plan communities like Ripley and Springfield and Yamanto and all these areas that are surfacing. So we've created a centre of Ipswich, which we're going to be part of, and the centres, which are growing from strength to strength. And you're attracting people like Dusitani Resort, the GE have got their state headquarters here. The biggest thing I've got, and the problem I've got, every day I'm opening a new business. Yeah. And it's great to see.
It was at that point I realised that, much like our earlier guests, this was a man that was driven by passion. A passion for the city he grew up in and the desire to see it transform into the city he believed it should be. Over the years, Paul has been offered numerous private enterprise roles, even offers to transition to state or federal politics. But on each occasion, he's turned them down, saying he cannot leave the job he's doing until he knows it's completed. So I wanted to know, from his point of view over the years and dealing with thousands of different businesses, what is it that makes a good business?
Whether you're the mayor of Ipswich or running a small business or whatever you're doing, it's the same principles. You know, the thing that I did when coming in as mayor is to make sure that we realise that we're there to serve the customers. We're there, that being mayor is not a title or a position, it's a responsibility. A lot of people, you know, bounce themselves, they buy a little coffee shop and say, I'm the manager of the coffee shop, and forget about expecting their customers to serve them, because they're the manager. And to me, that when I had my restaurant, the first thing I did on the night I opened was mop the floor. And my staff said, don't do that. And I said, no, I'm happy to do that, because I want to show them that mopping the floor, anybody can do it. And everybody should do it. And looking after customers is probably the most important ingredients. The problem we have with businesses, they've forgotten about how to run a business. And technology changes, so technology is not a thing to run your business. It's just a tool in the toolbox. The key things is have good service and treat your customers with respect and make it an experience. When people come to you, and this is what I love the most, the local paper rings them and they want to tell them everything that's bad, instead of talking about the positive things. You know, I have people walking into a shop and they said, I'm not going to that shop anymore. All you want to do is whinge about all the things around him. Mm. You know, what people don't realise, when people go shopping or go into a restaurant, they want an experience, they want to enjoy. Instead of whinging, saying, great to have you here today, you know, have a coffee, this, that. And you know what people don't realise, that they'll come back.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting there whinging, you can't wait to get out of there.
I pressed on this a little further, because you don't just gain an 88% popularity vote by being a nice guy.
Yeah, look, I don't look at the 88%. I just look at the enormous responsibility, and every vote you get is an enormous responsibility. So what I've got is someone who believes in me, because that 88% is not me as a political party, it's me as just as a person. And people know that, you know, I'm there to try and lead the city. Now, it's my job to do what people want or what's best for them. Now, sometimes they're the same, but sometimes they differ. And that's probably the biggest dilemma that you have in this job.
Sometimes you need to give people what they are asking for, and other times you need to give them what they need. Did you hear Paul say that? The skill is in dressing up the ability to provide the clients, or in his case, the constituents, with what they need while making it look like they are getting what they asked for. I know many small business owners who struggle with this concept every day.
But at the end of the day, I got to sit down and say, what is the best for the next generation and what is the best for my customers? And when I'm in the hotel, I treated people the same. When I was in a restaurant, I treated people the same. So I think my experience in business has had a lot. And you can take that forward and understanding in the businesses I've been in, including when I was industrial chemist for 17 years. So I've had a good cross range of common life experiences that I've brought to council here. If I was coming to work because of my pay packet, I don't think I'd show up on the second day.
You could earn because more running
I haven't had a holiday in 10 years and I've worked 24/7. I contracted MS, but I still go and I just love coming to work. I'm like a kid in a candy shop.
Jed Bartlett, US president from 1999 to 2007, well, president on the American TV drama The West Wing, was portrayed as living in office with multiple sclerosis. And you heard Paul tell us that he's living that life for real. And that's not the only rocky road Paul has had to endure during his tenure as mayor. He's seen some dark days with investigations from the Queensland Crime and Corruption Commission, or the CCC, over allegations of wrongdoing, all of which he was cleared for. So I had to know, how does he deal with all of the setbacks and frustrations of this life that he chose?
My staff probably see the best and the worst in me. I'm a person that when I'm feeling depressed, it only happens in my office here when I go out. No matter what happens, when I was under that enormous investigation, it was the longest 12 months of my life where I was investigated and they finally found nothing wrong. But, you know, that was hard. It was very hard on me, on my family, on my friends. But every time I went out, my staff and I always made sure our Facebook was all positive. Everything I did was positive and I never faltered in being positive. But then I'd come back in the office and just collapse.
I chatted with Paul about business and public life, his hopes for the future, and takeaways from the past. Paul said he sees Aussie blokes as thinking they are bulletproof, not wanting to discuss when things aren't going great. The guys think that's girl talk, he said. He said the pressure he felt and the stress he went through during the CCC investigation, there were times when all he wanted to do was share with his mates exactly how he was feeling and what was going on.
Oh, just wonderful stuff.
Yep.
You know, I'm blessed with the most caring staff. And the thing about it is staff, I don't think it's because of me, but they believe in what you're doing. They're, you know, they're just as passionate about the city and I'm just a vehicle to help them achieve what they want to achieve.
As an interesting side note, he went on to say,
when I first started business in the restaurant, I can tell you that this is a good lesson for anybody starting a business. Don't try and employ yourself. You want everybody to do everything like you, and if you do that, you'll be like me. I kept going through staff like you wouldn't believe, and I'll never forget, I said to the manager, what is wrong with everybody around here? And she said, you, look in the mirror. And I thought about it, and then I realised that everybody in life has their own way to get to point A. I'll go straight there. But I shouldn't stop people from going to B, C, and then A, because that's their feel. You know, their fulfillment of their own comfort zone. So I've learned that. I've learned a lot about leadership. I've learned the hard way. I listened to people talking about leadership and I said, you guys haven't got a clue. That's textbook bullshit. You know, what you need to talk about leadership is about being a leader is about everybody being a team. In the olden days when there was an employer-employee gap, you know, unions were relevant. But what unions have got to do now is not be a conflict between employer and employee, because the employers love their staff to death. What they've got to do is work with the employer to give as many skills to the employees to deal with the changes that are happening in the workplace and make our staff more skilled so they can get the next promotion.
Speaking of promotion, Paul has his own take on how business owners should be looking at PR opportunities.
I spend most of my time outside of Ipswich. I get invited to the North Coast, the Gold Coast, Cairns, Sydney. I'm going to Melbourne in the next couple of weeks to speak. I've been invited to Malaysia. Every city in the world invites me to hear about the Ipswich story. Because I know the more I speak about Ipswich outside, the more Ipswich will grow. So it's about marketing. My job is to market the city. Does my staff tell me the office runs better when I'm not here, so I'm happy to be outside. And that's true, because you imagine if I'm sitting here in the desk worrying about the next pothole or the next barking dog. The council knows how to deal with those. My job as a leader to go out there and sell the city. And all the money we're getting is people that come here on a daily basis with a vision and to spend money here, and they're coming here because they believe that the leadership is right. And I've always said that this city's got to run as a business. I've got a board of directors. We don't argue in council, but we do argue on a fortnightly basis as a board of directors, because you shouldn't argue in public. And from that, I've then got 190,000 shareholders that I've got to, at the end of my term, will come out and say, this is what I've done. And every year when I bring out the new budget, I always have a report card on the last 12 months. So I treat the people well. And, you know, what I said in Malaysia, I'll never forget, I said that one of the things that politicians don't do well is that they always bring down budgets to get re-elected. I'll never do that. I like to bring down budgets to in the best interest of the city in the future. And economic development is a 5-year, 10-year, 20-year strategy. The other thing is that most politicians spend 100% of their time dealing with, you know, 5% of the whinges. I spend 100% of my time dealing with 90% of the good people, and the 5% can get stuffed, because you'll never make them happy. They'll hate you because you're breathing.
Yeah.
And they just want to take up your time with rubbish.
Now, isn't that the same as any business owner? Our job is to get out there and sell the concept of our business to the broader world. If you haven't yet listened to last week's episode, go back, because Dan Norris said it best last week when he talked about getting attention. I hope you enjoyed listening to some of the stories from the trenches this week. It helps me when things are difficult to know that every one of the experts I have interviewed for this show, all those people who seem so confident and knowledgeable, have their own stories from the trenches, stories of their challenges, their own dark times, and how they personally overcome the challenges to go on and get better every day. A big thanks to this week's guests, Carsten Primdale from Vantage Compliance, Oksana Korakova from Impero, John Carney from American Property Source, Sally Arnold from Creating Encores, and Ipswich Mayor Paul Pasali. As always, though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. If you have enjoyed today's show, please share it with your network and maybe jump over to iTunes and leave the show a review. Oh, and by the way, you'll hear more from Mayor Paul in future episodes. But hang around at the end of this episode to hear the story of how the Mayor became a Guinness World Record holder. Until next week, I'm leaving you with a quote from my favourite author, Paulo Coelho. Be brave. Take risks. Nothing can substitute experience.
Keep today's conversation going on our Facebook page, facebook.com/notanotherbusinessshow. Not Another Business Show is edited and produced by Corporate Podcast Productions. Let your story be heard.
Probably about 15 years ago, I was traveling around Australia with doing some guest speaking with another lady who collected elephants, and I'll never forget the interview where when I told someone that this lady collected elephants, and they said, well, how big is the house? So it must be a sort of made it a bit humorous. But she just said to me, look, just collect something that you enjoy. And I've always had a love, you know, being Sicilian and Italian, that, you know, when I was a kid, you know, with an Italian mother with the espresso machine, you had a choice of espresso. You know, it's just a traditional thing in our household, and I've always enjoyed it. Now, I just think a good cup of coffee is the perfect environment for a discussion, for a business, for recreation, whatever you want to do. There's nothing better than a good cup of coffee, a good companion, and a good coffee shop. It's just great. And so I started collecting cups, and I thought, how many could there be? 6,500 later, and there was the guy that held the record was a cafe in America, mm-hmm. 220 sets, because if you got one cup or 20 cups, it's just one. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the same. So I broke the record at 650, and his record, I'm waiting for him to break it again, because I'm up to about 1,400 sets now. So it's just growing and growing, and you can see in the office here, what I use it for, people come in and actually get to pick their cup. And I use it as a conversation piece, and I say, well, I could tell, it's like a look in the crystal ball. I said, this is a happy cup, you must be a happy person, or a sad person, or an aggressive person. So it starts the conversation. So, and then what I've done is created my own cups with, you know, you, me and Ipswich, and you, me and coffee, and I've boxed them. And charities use them for fundraising. Mm. And sometimes they've had $1,000, $2,000, they get $5,000 for these cups, which I've included. They get to have an hour morning tea with me as well as get the cups. So, you know, it's proved very well. And the final thing, I've got busloads of seniors and people coming in to use it as a tourist attraction. I love it. I just love meeting people, and I just love showing people the coffee cup.